Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story. We break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester and Jad Chambers producing for you. We are excited to be here. Should be a fun Tuesday for you. We have Chiefs talk coming top of the next hour. Dan Israel will join. We'll see what Dan thinks about the 10-1 start. Is it for real? Are they going to be okay? We'll get into that with Dan and look ahead to a Black Friday game with the Raiders, and also just the wacky schedule the Chiefs have to play from here on out as far as timing. That will be daunting. We're also going to talk some Royals here in our next segment with Jalen Thompson. Our first visit with Jalen. Looking forward to that visit. You know, we got into a conversation that I don't think either of us intended to yesterday as it pertains to the Royals and the trade they made and how good is Brady Singer and how good is India and, you know, all these different things that it really got my wheels spinning a little bit. So we're going to bring in some help on that, see what the latest is, what the plan is maybe, because I think, you know, if this is chess and not checkers, as if this is a part of a series of moves, I think it's very different than if it just stayed as one move. But we'll get into that a little bit later as well. We'll take your calls on the IHOP hotline. It's open for this segment, and it's the official breakfast partner IHOP is of Xbox, celebrating with exclusive Xbox merchandise, games, reward offers for loyalty members. That number is 869-1240. We will give away some HTO later in the show as well. All kinds of good stuff. We've got a big KU basketball game tonight against Duke. We've got Monday Night Football from last night, I think, of impact as we watch the Chiefs constantly. Tommy, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Happy Tuesday. We're inching closer and closer to Thanksgiving. We haven't talked much Thanksgiving on the program yet. I mean, we're like, what, 48 hours away? You know, it's going to be busy. There's a lot going on.
You know, programming note too, we will not be with you Thursday or Friday, and we will make our weekly picks tomorrow at 10 o'clock. The Shockers, who we would normally talk to on a Wednesday at 10 o'clock, are in a holiday tournament. Their schedule is conflicted as well, as they've got weird game times and have to practice. We've got picks to make, and we won't be here Friday, so we're going to shift that up. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. I know Tommy's chomping at the bit to talk about picks because he had a good week last week.
Hey, it wasn't just a good week. It was a great week. I feel like, though.
So here's the problem, though. When you go 6-0, but also go 0-6 a lot, I feel like you're with the rest of us right around 500.
A lot. I've went 0-6 one time. I didn't go 0-6 a lot.
Sorry, I thought it was twice. No, I thought it was twice.
I've gone 0-6 once. I've gone 6-0 twice. There's been a 1-5 or a couple of those mixed in maybe to the mix as well.
I don't know. Did your wallet reflect your good week?
No, it didn't. And I texted you that I had the worst beat.
Hammered this weekend.
I had the worst beat that I've maybe ever had with the Sunday night game with the Eagles and the Rams. I had a 4-leg parlay that would have, you know, got me a couple $100, and Kyren Williams was 2 yards short of his over, and that would have hit. That would have hit the entire thing. I did everything else. I got Saquon his over, touchdown for Saquon, Matthew Stafford touchdown passes, and Kyren Williams was 2 yards short, and that was the worst beat I've maybe ever had.
That's bad. I had a half yard beat from Roma Dunze this weekend. Oh. This weekend was bad. Now, I will say I probably deserved it. Honestly, because I've had a really good like last 4, 5, 6 weeks, but I got hammered. I didn't hit one bet. I was like 0-11, I think, in football bets this weekend. I maybe hit some college, but as far as the NFL goes, I mean, just got smashed this weekend.
NFL's really hard. I mean, I think NFL's harder than college football is. There's a little bit of, the top level down, like if you're just betting against the spread and things like that. I don't know. I kind of feel like college football is slightly more predictable than the NFL is. So I don't like betting nearly as much.
I don't like betting. Because I don't watch, like when it's the NFL, like I watch 95% of what happens in the NFL. Like very little happens in the NFL that I haven't seen, because I watch all the primetime games. Of course, we watch all the Chiefs, and then I watch like Red Zone. I don't miss much. So I'm more locked in. It's more fun for me to bet, but it's way harder because the trends get bucked all the time, all the time. Rick chimes in, and congratulations to Rick. 9-legger for $128 of profit, a 9-legger. Attaboy, Rick. Love it.
We've got a buddy that I don't know if we've talked about him before on the show that tends to bet, at least he used to, tends to bet like 14-leg parlays.
Yep.
In the past, he sent us what the bet slip looks like and all the different like wild bets. And he's never hit a single one, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I'll hit, you know, when I've been on a heater, if you tease him down, I mean, I've had some 6-7-leggers hit, but they're
we're talking like he's doing like, it's got like 10,000 to one odds and things like that. And it's there might need to be an intervention here. Like let's not bet 14-leg parlays anymore.
No, that's the degenerate fun. You know, I always tell people like, cause we talk and they're like, oh my God, there are people that will bet a whole lot of money on like straight bets.
Yeah.
And then there are people like me, and it sounds like Rick, who will bet like $5 or $10 on some crazy bets, and just like that's the way I like to do it. And yeah, I know
you're making dart throws.
I don't need a lecture from betting people to know that that's silly. Like that's what I have fun with, and I'm much better off betting smaller amounts than because if I make a big bet on something, then I get stressed. I don't like to ever get stressed about anything then at that point it's not fun anymore. It's Rick just said he bet $1.25 to win $128. That's fantastic.
That's the way to do it right there.
Rick, that is awesome. And no regrets either. When you see those, sometimes you're like, man, I wish I'd have bet $10. But no regrets. That's fantastic. But yeah, like if you get to the point where it stresses you, then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
Like I don't like that. I just have fun with like the sport of it. I tell my wife all the time, here's how I do it. You can do it however you want. Like I have one of the, you know, like the apps with some money in it. And I just use like for my fantasy sports, for my bet, like it all sits there and is just like this pool. So nothing ever really comes in or out. It's like this, you know, fake account. And I call it our fun money. So like we'll go, you know, whatever. And we'll take a trip or whatever. But yeah, it's once you cross over, like you gotta, like that's why I like the crazy ones. And that's why I like all the competitive betting sites, because they're all like competing for our business and giving us these wild and stupid boosters for people like me, right? Like for people like me, they're like, plus 20%, I gotta take that.
Historically, I've done it a different way than you have, where I put money into the account, I'll bet, and then I'll get it. I mean, if it goes down to zero, it goes down to zero. I'll have to put more money in. But if I win, I'll immediately withdraw that money and put it back in my bank account because I'm like, okay, I won. I'm not going to touch it. You know, that's my profit. I'm walking away. You know, so it, I don't have, like, honestly, all the apps, all the services, I think I have $0 in all of them. And then when I want to bet, I'll put in 20 bucks. And then if I win anything, I'll move it right back out. So I don't have anything sitting in an account.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it adds to, I love it. People listen to the show know I love it. And I know there are a lot of people on this show that love it.
Yeah.
And I always appreciate talking shop when I'm out and about and somebody will catch me and tell me about their bets or laugh at me for a bet that we lost. And that's great. I love that.
Can I get, this is a different topic entirely. Can I commiserate for just a second, you know, talk with you about something and our listeners? We haven't talked much Thanksgiving lately. And I'm feeling, you talk about stressing while you're betting and watching football games. I'm in charge of the turkey this year, and I've never done a turkey before. And I'm kind of stressed about it. Like, that, I didn't realize when I took that responsibility on that that's a big deal. Like, it's something that, I mean, everybody's kind of counting on you. You're banking on it being really good. So that's what I've been focused on the last, like, few days is researching and figuring out. I'm doing it on my Traeger, and so trying to figure out the best way to get that done. Do I brine it? Do I not brine it? How long do I smoke it? What kind of rub do I use? What kind of pellet chips do I, like, all that stuff? And I'm just like, look, I've smoked a lot of different kinds of meat before. I've never done a turkey. I've been stressing out about that for the last few days or so. And I sympathize now. I never really understood it until this year. I sympathize with all the guys out there who are responsible for taking care of the turkey.
You know, I have not. So my Thanksgiving has been, you know, growing up until I was almost 30 years old when I was around all the family. I'm the youngest son of five, right? That was never like, hey, you handle the turkey.
Not your
this
responsibility.
Year. You know what I mean?
Right.
No. I'm like, I'll handle Bloody Marys. You know, like, I don't, there's not that you're just the pecking order. It is the way of things, right? And so then we move here. And, you know, when we first moved here, new man, and this time of year, like, Thanksgiving is an insanely busy time. It's, you know, there are no holidays, there are no days off in TV. You know, like, here in radio, we have network programming we can run. That doesn't happen in local news. Like, there is not a day or a time that regularly scheduled newscasts do not go on, unless they're preempted by, you know, some event or something. But even that doesn't really happen anymore. So you're either working Thanksgiving for that reason, or this time of year when you're in the sports world on TV, like, you've got everything happening. You might have an NFL game on Thursday. The Chiefs might be playing, or like on Friday, or high school football championships are this weekend. So you can't ever really do much anyway. And so I haven't ever had that responsibility. Now, and I think I've said this here before, back home, they threw the turkey out the way. They do prime rib on Thanksgiving now. And I'm like, where has that been? They do a big old rib roll. I'm like, what? Why was I wasting all this time on turkey?
Right.
Shout out to one of our great sponsors, Crestview. Fast forward to now. And I do work TV Thanksgiving. I just always kind of fall on that sword for everybody. So I'll go in and I'll handle all the shows. So, you know, the main crews are off and stuff. Now, thanks to our sponsors, the last couple of years, we've gone to Crestview and taken that home and made it. So it's mostly done. It's kind of like a stick it in the oven situation. Right. Totally not stressful. This year, we don't have any family in town. We got nothing. I've said this before, too, and you guys may or may not know. My wife and I have, you know, the side business, the HTOs. It's the tomorrow is the busiest day of the year. Like, absolutely, like, without question, except for when you open the store for the very first time. So that's insane. Like, right now, we've had an insane morning with that. And so we're actually just going to go to Crestview and have brunch.
There you go.
And then I'm going to go to TV work. And so I haven't had to stress. Shout out to Crestview, by the way, if you're looking for those kinds of things, if you're in a similar boat. And I've been surprised at how many people are like us. Maybe they're working. Maybe they don't have, like, there's a lot of people to go to that. And that's one of the great things. Check them out. You can get access to that stuff with just a social membership, even if you don't play the golf or the tennis or all the other great stuff. So give them a call. But that's what we do. So I don't know what to tell you. When we did Friendsgivings, and that's when we would kind of handle turkeys, we fried them. So that's, you know, it's dangerous, but it's relatively simple.
Yeah.
And it's delicious.
If you look
but
at
we
my,
just fried them.
If you look at my kitchen, I've got recipes printed out. I've got sticky notes everywhere. I've got things timed out, like when I've got to get it brined, when I've got to get up and get it dried off and put on the smoker, all of that. I'm kind of stressed out about it. I'll be able to enjoy the football games and everything. But man, like, I just want to make sure it tastes good for the family. That's the only thing that stresses me out. Can I tell you the quintessential thing?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Thanksgiving joke, though, it's my favorite of all time. Which side of the turkey has more feathers?
I don't think I've heard this one.
The outside.
Oh, dang it. I have heard that one. That is good. Yeah. I do enjoy that one. And shout out to, you know, KWCH 12 News, where I'll be tomorrow. They cater in like Stroud's every year, which is great, too. I will be well fed tomorrow. Have no concerns about me.
And on Thursday, hopefully, because that's actually when Thanksgiving
is. Oh, that's
is.
What I mean. Thursday, not tomorrow. Whatever day it is. Thursday, yeah. And then for the next 4 days, Andrew asks, is turkey soup a meal? I would say, Andrew, it absolutely is. That's
absolutely
one way
not.
You could use all those leftovers.
1,000% not.
Yes, absolutely. If you want to throw it all into a big old pot and create some turkey noodle soup, heck yeah. That's a great meal, right? It's cold outside. Heck yeah. I like it. Andrew's on the right track. All right. We have a busy show. We're going to start it with some Royals talk. We'll continue the conversation that we got into yesterday. Went down a road we didn't expect. Our first visit from Jalen Thompson of the KC Star reports on the Royals every day. We're going to get to the bottom of this trade. Do we like it? Is it one piece of a series of moves? All the questions about it. We'll have those answered next. Jalen joins us. Don't go anywhere. It's Sports Daily. It's Al Brockton Caster. It's a Tuesday. We'll be right back.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
On your way into work, want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car? With the Odyssey app and odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app, visit odyssey.com, search for KFH, download it today and get started. Found out yesterday we are getting close to 10,000 podcast downloads of the show last month. So thank you, everybody, for your support of the show, for listening to us down the road. I know that podcast's one of my favorite things that we're able to do. I know a lot of people listen to the show that way whenever it's convenient for you, and you'll be able to listen to this interview whenever you'd like as well. If you can't join us live, if you got to leave in progress, Jalen Thompson joins us from the Kansas City Star. First visit for Jalen here on Sports Daily. Very excited to have you in, Jalen. The timing is perfect because the Royals make, I mean, I think it's the first mega trade of this offseason across baseball, and it is a mega trade, right? Welcome into Sports Daily.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on, and you are absolutely right. It is a big trade, especially for the Kansas City Royals. When you look at what they wanted to do this offseason, they wanted to get a leadoff hitter. They wanted to get someone that can get on base, and acquiring Jonathan India and also Joey Weimer for Brady Singer does that.
So real quick, Jalen, let's look at this, because it is a fascinating, you've got college teammates. They were drafted in the same year. They were drafted in the same round. And like I know they played obviously different positions, but their profiles are way similar, right? Mm-hmm. They have shown flashes of being really good at what they do. They have shown flashes of inconsistency. It is an interesting trade. Just from that perspective, like these two guys in particular being traded for one another is pretty wild.
It is. You know, when you look at two players, like you said, that played on the same college team, they kind of took the same trajectory. Jonathan India was Rookie of the Year in 2021, and he had to battle some injuries, but he has played well for what he's been as a second baseman. He's been consistent, and then, you know, the power hasn't always been there, but he shows some flashes. You look at Brady Singer, he's been great last year, a 3.73 ERA, I think, and he's really shown that he can command his pitches in the strike zone. He added a sweeper, a four-seam fastball last year, so he really looked like he took the step in the right direction. But can he keep that up going further in his career? I think his sinker averages around 92 miles per hour. So will that be something that he can play towards? So I'm sure the Royals weighed all those decisions when they made this move. And, you know, when talking to general manager J.J. Piccolo, he said sometimes you have to take a risk in order to improve your ball club. And that's kind of what they did here. They gave up on a young pitcher that they loved and adored in Brady Singer that they drafted out of college. But they got someone that they really needed to help support Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, and the rest of the lineup.
It certainly seems like, Jalen, that this is a trade that maybe has been telegraphed for quite a while. You know, Jonathan India was identified as potentially a target for Kansas City going all the way back to the trade deadline. And then Brady Singer has been, you know, sort of speculated to be on the trade block for a little while now with Kansas City. So it certainly seems like this is something that maybe J.J. Piccolo has at least kept his eye on. Was it, in your estimation, partially the fact that the Reds tacked on Joey Weimer to the deal that finally got it over the hump? Or was this something that they've been discussing for quite a while?
Yeah, in talking to J.J. Piccolo, he said that you're absolutely right. They were looking at Jonathan India for quite some time, really going back to last season, and then it kind of ramped back up during the offseason. He is someone that they wanted to have be the guy that can hit doubles in the big Kauffman Stadium and steal bases and be productive. Someone that can get on base, like I said, for Bobby Witt Jr. And going in Joey Weimer in that deal did help take it over the top, because you're getting someone that could compete to be possibly the fourth outfielder this year. And if he puts it all together, he was a top 100 prospect. Maybe he could be something a little bit more. They like the tools that he has in his possession. And maybe with that great defense that he has playing in Kauffman Stadium, if the power comes around, it could be someone that they could use very well.
I think in a best case scenario, Jalen Thompson reports for the Kansas City Star on the Royals. I think in a best case scenario, both of these players in 2 years become very expensive. I think Brady Singer has the potential to be more expensive, which could be a win for the Royals. There's a pretty real world where both teams win in this trade, right? I'm a little concerned about Brady Singer going to a bandbox in Cincinnati. But this could be a win-win type of trade. I don't think I love it as much as Tommy. I do love that the Royals found a leadoff hitter, though, which was very obviously their biggest need last year. I mean, he would step in immediately and be the best candidate to be a leadoff hitter outside of Bobby Witt Jr. like right now. So that part of it I love. But both teams can win this. Yes, you think did both teams potentially get better with this trade?
I think both teams can win this trade. You look at, like I said, with Jonathan India and what he provides. You're adding someone that can pretty much be on base 40%, maybe 50% of the time when Bobby Witt Jr. is coming up to bat. And if you have that capability, that forces the opposing pitchers to pitch Bobby differently, because you can't necessarily walk him, because then you have to have two guys on for Vinny Pasquantino and Salvador Perez and the like. So I think that's an important thing to do. And having a leadoff hitter just sets the tempo. And the Royals like to run and play fast. So you have someone that can steal bases as well, just like India can do. That just takes the Royals offense to another level. I still don't think that the Royals are done yet, because they need to have someone in the middle of the lineup to help lengthen it out a little bit more. And maybe they'll get that during the free agency or another trade at the winter meetings. But I think from the Royals' perspective, it was worth it because you have pitching depth. You re-sign Michael Walker, so you can get rid of Brady Singer or trade him, even though it's tough. But you have pitching depth behind him. Kyle Wright will be coming back. You have Alex Marsh, Chris Bubich, Daniel Lynch, guys that can fill in, right? For the Reds' perspective, I think it's good because they needed another starting pitcher to go with Hunter Green and the rest of those guys. And Brady Singer can really pitch well. He has a great ground ball rate that will play well at Great American Ballpark. So we'll see what happens with him. But I think it can be a win-win for both guys.
What do you anticipate, Jalen, defensively, this trade looking like for Kansas City? Obviously, Jonathan India has been a second baseman. Michael Massey is the current second baseman for Kansas City. Is this something where Jonathan India could slot over to third base, or are we looking at, you know, maybe Michael Massey not playing second next year?
So when we asked J.J. Piccolo that question, he said that the Royals still have to figure all that out, and I feel like they're going to have conversations going into the rest of this offseason into spring training about where those guys would potentially can fit. He mentioned that he talked with Michael Massey about potentially playing some left field to add versatility to his game. Jonathan India, he can also play the right side of the diamond at third base, and maybe he'll be a DH. They need him to. Maybe Massey can DH. But, you know, the Royals are always versatile. So they'll put guys in different spots. And, you know, the old baseball adage, when you have a lot of talented players, you can just put them on the field. You'll find a place for them to play. So I think the Royals will kind of figure that out. But for right now, they're just going to take the offseason, try to see which pieces fit where in spring training and go from there.
Jalen Thompson, you can follow him on X at Jalen Thompson, J-A-Y-L-O-N. Got a great article up that digs into this trade down to the nitty gritty. I let's look forward with it a little bit, Jalen. And I think this for me is where I would pause on the trade until I see what else Piccolo does. I would have rather seen a piece like Singer go to a middle of the order bat. We heard rumors of Alec Bohm, guy that played at Wichita State, so we obviously pay more attention to that. But that would have made more sense because I do feel like Singer is a and this is why they got two players for him. I get it. Very valuable asset. Yes, he was the Royals' fourth starter. He's going to go to a lot of teams and be their second starter, maybe their third. I don't want to just say, oh, they've got Daniel Lynch and Bubich and some of these other names to replace him, because those guys have had that opportunity for a lot of years now and haven't been able to get it done. So I just wonder, like, are the Royals going with three and then, you know, two spots for that collection of three or four guys? Is there any thought whatsoever to bringing in another veteran just in case, because it hasn't worked for those guys thus far over their careers as starters? What is the pitching plan? Because Singer leaves a hole. I mean, the strength of the team was starting pitching. If it's not the strength of the team next year, there is risk in that, I think.
I totally agree with you. And I think that I wouldn't put it out the realm of possibility that they do go and try to get maybe another veteran starter. I even wrote in a story, just if I was the Royals, I would look at maybe bringing back Michael Lorenzen. You traded for him last year. He can play.
First thing I said.
Yeah. He can pitch in the rotation or he can be a reliever. So he has that versatility. And, you know, when they traded him for him, they gave up a good reliever in Walter Pennington, who really shined with the Texas Rangers. So if you want to kind of keep that trade even on level, you kind of got to want to bring back Michael Lorenzen if you can on a short deal, because he can be that bridge that you need. And plus, you don't know what you're going to get out of Kyle Wright when he comes back from right shoulder surgery. He might have to be brought along slowly. And if you like Chris Bubich and Daniel Lynch in the bullpen, like they shine so well during down the stretch in the postseason, you might want to keep those guys there. So you're going to have someone that can pitch in that fourth and fifth role. So I think getting another veteran like a Michael Lorenzen, or it could be someone else, but I think that could be a great stopgap for them as they continue to build out their roster.
You mentioned Chris Bubich, Jalen, and J.J. Piccolo at GM meetings a couple weeks ago said that they view Chris Bubich as a starting pitcher in their rotation. Do you think that, you know, assuming that he moves back to the rotation, either in that fourth spot or the fifth spot in the rotation, is that more about Bubich and how they feel about him, or is it more about they feel more solid about their bullpen, like with Lucas Ersig penciled in as the closer, if Hunter Harvey is healthy, some of those other pieces in the back end of that bullpen to be able to then move Bubich back into the rotation?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. When you look at the Royals bullpen, you have Lucas Ersig as the closer. So you know that is going to be nailed down. The ninth inning is nailed down. Now, the hardest thing to do is have your ninth inning nailed down. So the Royals have that. So how do you bridge the gap to Lucas Ersig? they are really high on Hunter Harvey. There's a reason. That's the reason why they traded for him. They like his stuff, his velocity, and what he can bring. Last year, he dealt with a lot of back injuries, and that kind of limited him down the stretch. I believe he pitched in like maybe two or three games for the Royals, if that, before getting injured. So if he can get back healthy, that can be your eighth inning guy. Do you still have John Schreiber, who can pitch the seventh inning or the eighth inning? And then they are going to keep Chris Stratton as well for right now. So if Stratton can get back to where his form, that's another guy you can put in the bullpen in those late to middle innings. So if you have those guys kind of situated near the back end, maybe you do ask Chris Bubich to start again and fill in a role maybe as a fifth guy or the fourth guy in the rotation.
All right, Jalen, so let's project out again one more time, because now I think their need is attainable, and I would be curious for your take of how they will attain it. Are they willing still now to go spend some money and find that other middle of the order bat? Like, who bats behind Salvador Perez now, if it goes, you know, or Vinny Pasquantino, depending on who fills that hole? Because it is a hole, one we know they need. Can they just simply get it through free agency? Are they willing to spend that kind of money?
I think if you look at the current free agent market, there are a couple of names that could fit well. I'm sure you guys all have heard the name Tyler O'Neill being thrown about in certain rumors. And I think that could be a good fit for the Royals if they want to spend that kind of money, because he hit 31 home runs last year. He's familiar with the Midwest. He played with the St. Louis Cardinals. He shined with the Boston Red Sox. He can play all three outfield positions, and he's a two-time Gold Glover. So if you look at what the Royals value, which is defensive versatility, offensive strong suits, he checks all those boxes, and he could be the perfect middle of the order hitter for what that team needs. But it, like you said, are they willing to spend the money on that? I think it's going to come down to what Juan Soto gets in free agency, because he's going to set the market for everyone. So if Juan Soto signs, then what will the other teams that were in the Juan Soto sweepstakes like want to do? I always say, like, maybe there's a chance they could go out and spend big and look at an Anthony Santander, but I don't think that will be too far out there of their range or what they want to spend. So yeah, I'm looking at like the Tyler O'Neill levels and guys like that, just to see like who can fit in. And also, don't forget, you got to have somebody to play on the bench as well. So do you bring back some of those veterans that you had last year that really played a big part in a big role on your team, like a Tommy Pham? They love his aggression and his intensity, and that was a big value in the leadership department. Do you bring him back, or do you rely on some other guys in the minor leagues to step up? So they have a lot of decisions they have to make. But like you said, that fifth spot in the lineup behind Salvador Perez is going to be key. And if they don't sign anyone, then you're going to rely on, is NJ Melendez ever going to take the next step? Is Hunter Renfroe going to be the guy that you thought he was going to be when you signed him last year? So those things are all weighing on the mind of the Royals right now.
This is more of a philosophical question, Jalen. This is the second offseason that we've seen J.J. Piccolo and John Sherman, for that matter, being aggressive and, you know, making trades. And, you know, of course, we know about what they did last offseason with Lugo and Waka, and then what they did at the trade deadline, bringing in all of the different pieces to make that playoff push. That was one of the major knocks with the Royals for so long, is that they were unwilling or really unable to go out and spend money, or didn't want to. They weren't able to be aggressive. What does this continue to tell you, the second offseason in a row, that J.J. Piccolo and John Sherman are really trying to be proactive in putting a team together that can go and compete and make it to the playoffs again?
I think it all boils down to particularly one player, and that's Bobby Witt Jr. He's the superstar of your team. You signed him long-term, and you made a commitment to him as far as being the franchise guy, the next icon of the organization. So you have to spend money to help support him in everything that you can, because he's someone that is going to be here for the long term. And you don't want to waste his prime years with a team that is not performing to the peak proficiency that they have. And I think another thing, too, is if you look at how the Royals' identity is structuring out, it's about pitching and defense. And pitching has really been strong. And a lot of credit goes to Brian Sweeney, Zach Bove, Mitch Stetter, and the rest of the coaching staff that really have brought these guys in. It started with Cole Reagans, then it went to Seth Lugo, and now Michael Wacha decided to re-sign back after just great years. So you have that nucleus of starting pitching plus Bobby Blue Jr., and you need to cultivate all that. So I think going out and being aggressive and getting things that can help uplift the team is a major reason why I think this philosophy of spending money has been so aggressive.
Right now, the Royals are the third favorite in the American League Central. Just as we're taking notes of things, and it is tight between the top four teams this year, between the Guardians, the Twins, the Royals, the Tigers. They're all under 3-1, but they're all tight. So Vegas sees it the same way. Jalen, excellent job. Let's do this again. Let's get you in here more often. Very nice stuff today. We appreciate it. You can go follow Jalen's work at the KC Star. You can follow him on X, find all those articles, dig deep into that trade. Brady Singer for a couple of pieces from Cincinnati. The Royals have their leadoff hitter. Go check it out. There's great stuff. Jalen, let's do this again soon.
Thank you guys so much. Let's definitely do it again soon, and enjoy Thanksgiving and enjoy all that good food that's going to be coming your way.
That's right. Happy Thanksgiving, Jalen.
Thank you guys.
Nice stuff there. Excellent, excellent work. Tommy, we'll get him in regularly during the season. Yep. That was really good insight, really good stuff. Got everything covered for us. Man, that is a fascinating, fascinating trade. Notice he called Brady Singer a great pitcher, Tommy.
I get it, but I think the sum of what they got in return,
I don't disagree with that.
I love the trade. I think Singer is expendable. Didn't change my mind whatsoever. I think it's a great move.
No, I don't. I'm undecided on the trade because I need to see the other moves that the Royals make. If they bring back Lorenzen, I love the trade. Right? What I'm leery of. And Jalen, if you're still with us, Ken says great analysis there too. What I'm a little bit leery of is just being ready to plug in two of three from Bubich, Lynch, and Marsh into the rotation, because now your starting pitching potentially isn't a strength anymore. And I don't think the Royals want to go down that
road. I think their
road.
Starting pitching will absolutely continue to be a strength as long as you've got Reagans and Lugo anchoring that rotation.
Strength at the top, yeah. But the depth was a big piece for
that's
them. That's the big best, part of it.
That's
for
the
them.
Best top two rotation in baseball, in my opinion.
Well, in the American League, at least.
Well,
yes.
At least in the American League. Maybe all of baseball.
Yeah, I agree. But it takes. But that's only 40% of your games, right, that those two are pitching. So we'll see. I think that they're going to fill out the rotation. Don't get me wrong. Like, I am predicting that I will like this trade before the season starts because I think there are more moves to be made. The other thing is now with India as a table setter, there's also a piece of if they get that other middle of the bat order, then yeah, okay, if they make their offense that much better and more versatile and dynamic, then yeah, I'll also be ready to swallow the loss of a high-quality starting pitcher. I just think those guys are harder to find, but it's not as, you know, it may not be as urgent this year. I love the trade because you don't see trades like this in baseball that often anymore. Just straight kind of, you know, good player for good player, two teams trying to fit needs and do all those things. Kudos to the Royals for making moves and continuing to stay aggressive. Man, there's a lot of momentum for that franchise right now. All right. If you want to comment on that, you've got a segment to do it next as we get ready for Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, coming top of the hour. You can do that. You can leave us your video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can find us on X and come at us directly there. You can call us on the IHOP hotline, or you can leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app. It's easy to do if you're listening to us there. We can take your calls lots of different ways. We'll come back. We'll have more Sports Daily for you right after this.
KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Castor. Our thanks to Jalen Thompson for hopping in the first time. We'll make that a habit. That was very good stuff. If you missed any of it, if you're joining us late, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Lots of people. I mentioned it right before we came in there, Tommy. We got some cool news, about 10,000 people downloading that each month for the show here. podcasting's the way to go, man. Like, if you're not happen to be driving around in the time that we're on, you can still take in the show. You've always been able to do that with these video streams. Those get archived forever, but so does the show itself. It's really cool. So download the Odyssey app and just search KFH. You'll find the show. It's super easy.
And hey, that's going to be a segment for sure. So if you maybe don't have the time or the ability to consume the entire show from start to finish, which Jad does a great job of getting that produced and uploaded onto the Odyssey app and anywhere that you find your podcasts, that interview with Jalen will be a segment all by itself. So you can go back and you can listen to just that one if you want to. The cool thing too, by the way, I don't know if you know this, Jacob, but as much as we love the Odyssey app, maybe your preferred podcast provider is Spotify or Apple or something like that. Yeah. You can listen to our show on those major podcast platforms. And so it's not just the Odyssey app. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts.
So, and here's the other thing. We'll just take a quick aside here in a short segment. You can watch us anytime too.
You can.
So we always say we're on 12 News Connect, and I think people understand that we're there live and you can watch that way, and you can, and we appreciate that. The same idea exists. So if you're at home and you want to watch the show, because we're just so dang good looking, mostly, it's easy to do that. You download the 12 News Connected app on your smart TVs and your smart devices. And the show, like, it's like a episodic type show just sitting right there for you. So that's also, you know, something you can do with the program. You get a day behind, you want to, you know, while you're getting ready, whatever it is, you can also watch us that way. So all kinds of different ways we're growing the show. We really appreciate everybody for being a part of it and can't say thank you enough. So we've got Dan Israel coming up top of the next hour. We'll get to Monday Night Football. I think as we're sizing up the competition as it pertains to the Chiefs, Monday Night Football was very meaningful in that regard. The Harbaugh Bowl, two teams we feel like are going to be contenders all the way through. So we'll do that in the second hour. We'll get you ready for KU Duke. K-State basketball played yesterday and finally opened things up. But I don't know if it's a little deceptive. I'll tell you what I mean later. Basically, they shot the three ball like crazy, and they're always going to be good when they do that. It's more about what do they do when they don't. I think that's become the concern, but we'll get into that in hour number two as well. On the way out here of hour number one, let's give away some HTO. Great addition to the holiday meal planning, whatever it is you have planned. Maybe you've got an office party, a potluck, you're having everybody over. You can get some gallons from HTO. It is super easy. You can customize those. We've got tons. It'll be our busiest day of the year selling those gallons tomorrow. So maybe you had a pre-order. Don't forget to pick those up. You can still walk in and just get them as you go. But we're going to give you, while you go in, maybe for some gallons, get yourself a free cup of tea and a free coffee as well. All you got to do to win a free iced tea and a free iced or hot coffee is text the keyword T, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. These are good for any of the Wichita metro locations. So East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. When we return, Dan Israel. Is he concerned at all about 10-1? I haven't talked to him yet, but I'm going to guess that he is. We've same concern we've had since they were, you know, 8-0 or 7-0 or whatever it is. But we get into it a little bit. What did he see? Probably more concerned, I think, than we have been because the defense isn't playing particularly well. But we'll get into all of that with Dan. You've got Black Friday football coming. You'll hear that on Odyssey, by the way. You'll hear it over on the home of the Chiefs, KNSS. That's coming up on Friday. But we'll get you to all of that in hour number two. Stick with us. Keep those video comments coming on YouTube, on Facebook, on X. Thanks for watching, listening, taking in the show, however it is you do. Hour number two on a Tuesday, coming right up.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
Welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two here. Jake Ballbrock, Tom DeCaster, Dan Israel joining us here on the IHOP Hotline, which is brought to you by IHOP, which is the official breakfast partner of Xbox, celebrating exclusive Xbox merchandise, games, reward offers for loyalty members. Dan, welcome in. Look, a win's a win's a win's a win. Yeah. I get it, but it isn't. You know, it is. It is, but it isn't.
Feels a little like rinse and repeat, doesn't it?
It does. And look, I think I said this yesterday. If the Chiefs weren't going for three straight, if this was in a vacuum this season,
yeah,
I think I would agree with it. But it's not in a vacuum. It is a part of something grander. And I think for that reason, a win is not a win is not a win is not a win. A win like that against the Panthers, I think it's totally reasonable to have a lot of concern right now if you're a Chiefs fan.
Yeah, well, look, I always believe in the you never apologize for a win,
right.
But I think the eye test here, it was tough. And I think the two things that concern me is we have to deal, we have to deal with this offensive tackle situation. And DJ Humphries is obviously an attempt to do that, but man, we need it now. We need to get this guy in place and up to speed so that he can play through the month of December. The second is, you know, second week in a row, the defense has struggled. And look, I don't want to take anything away from Bryce Young. I thought he played his butt off. I really did. I mean, I didn't expect him to play anywhere near that. But still, you know, I mean, a championship defense handles the best quarterbacks there are. And, you know, I don't think he's quite attained that stature yet. So I think those are the two main concerns here. And I asked on pregame last week, have teams figured out Spagnuolo's defense? And we kind of said, well, we'll see. But that's my concern is that, you know, teams are starting to figure out this defense. Now, maybe that's just, you know, maybe that's just me and my assessment, but those are my concerns. And you know, I don't know if you're a Chiefs fan, how you cannot have some concerns.
Yeah, you know, offensive line play, you mentioned DJ Humphries, and I don't know, as I'm watching the game on Sunday, Dan, I'm just thinking to myself, DJ Humphries off the street has got to be better than what they are doing at left tackle. Like, I don't care if the guy is in is up to game speed or not. I feel like he's a former Pro Bowl offensive lineman. They could plug and play him, and it would be an immediate upgrade, at least in my opinion.
I certainly think it generates competition amongst the players that are fighting for that position, and a veteran presence never hurts. One thing we saw last year, if you were to label last year's season, I would say experience matters, experience counts. And so here's a guy who's played for a decade at a Pro Bowl level. And so how that kind of experience, even if all he's doing is schooling, you know, Wanye and Kingsley, I still feel like that's a plus. And I'm with you. It just at this point, I think these guys need a break. They need to be able to sit back and swallow kind of what they've been learning the past 10 weeks. And I think it's, you know, I still think, look, Wanye doesn't have that many starts. Kingsley has no, you know, very few. I think he had the one start early in the season. And so it's to some degree, you know, these guys are rookies at this position and getting to play, but you know, that only comes so far. And with what the Chiefs' goal is, you can't afford to be learning in December in the playoffs.
I want to go back real quick to what you said about Spags and our teams, because I thought the same thing when I watched that game. It was all very predictable. Now, I don't think that's Spags' fault. I think it's the fault of not having a pass rush, because what kept happening is if it was, you know, third and medium, long, whatever it was, if it was an obvious passing down on, you knew Bryce Young knew, everyone knew the Chiefs were going to blitz because they have to blitz to create any pressure, because right now they're not getting it on the defensive line. I think that's what's made it predictable. Spags's beauty is when you don't see it coming, but right now everyone in the world can see it coming. What is happening right now with Karloftis and Jones? Uche's been a non-factor. I know they get a Minshew back, but What about the guys that are great pass rushers normally? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like Chris Jones just disappeared at the end of that game, and that can't happen. I mean, he is the leader of the defense in terms of, you know, experience and just stature, and they have to get pressure with that defensive line. If they can't do that, there's no way Trent McDuffie is going to be able to hang in there. There's certainly no way Nazi Johnson is going to be able to hang in there if they're trying to cover for 8 seconds. That's just, it's a bad plan. And so you're absolutely right. The fact that, you know, Dana came back and I was thinking, well, okay, we're kind of getting our mojo back on the defensive line and some good things are happening. You know, I mean, there's flashes of what you expect out of them, but I really feel like right now the pressure's on them. It starts with them, and I feel like those guys in the front line, Chris Jones in particular, I think he's just – they've got to either wreak havoc. He and George Karloftis have to either wreak havoc or there is just – and I'm not saying they have to sack the quarterback. I think that's one thing. You need to look at the Chiefs' stats in terms of being able to sack the quarterback. They're poor. I mean, they're down, I think, maybe 20-something. It's not good. But I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's always necessary to sack the quarterback. You just have to get really close and scare him, move him off the pocket or disrupt the timing. And that's what's not occurring. You know, if you can't get pressure with those guys, I just think it's a long day. You're asking the linebackers and the secondary just to really, you know, play out of their skulls, and they can't do that for 60 minutes.
On a positive note, Dan, the emergence of Noah Gray as a legitimate touchdown threat on this team over the last couple of weeks has been a revelation, at least in my opinion. I was texting with Jacob during the game on Sunday, and I said this sort of out of jest to him, but I mean, kind of slightly with a twinge of legitimacy. Are we seeing maybe kind of somewhat of a passing of the baton from Travis Kelce to Noah Gray? It's not a negative on Kelce at all, and it's not saying that Kelce won't continue to be extremely productive over the course of his career, but there's a level of trust that's been building with Patrick Mahomes and Noah Gray that we've really seen come into view lately.
Yeah, Tommy, I think that's a good observation. Maybe not the whole baton, maybe right. Half the baton.
Just a little bit of the baton,
But I think, you know, you saw, if you look at the play, I think it was the first touchdown, Kelce's kind of open underneath him, and he is excited that Gray is getting in the end zone. I think that the one thing you know, I appreciate about Travis Kelce is as long as the team is executing at a high level, he's happy. You know, he doesn't have to be the star, and I think that's a heck of a teammate role. You know, I mean, that's not an easy thing from going from this Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famer kind of status who is getting 100 yards a game to a guy who's maybe getting 25 yards a game. That's significant. But I think that the fact that Noah Gray is getting that duty that this hasn't just shifted to the wide receivers, I think is a major plus. And man, he looks good. I thought it was interesting. You know, I don't know if you guys heard Noah's post-game press conference after the game. And he also had talked with Dane and Hughes on our air. And he kind of said Mahomes gave him the secret. He said, Mahomes told me what the defense was, so it made it easy. So I felt like I was cheating. I was like, it's awesome that Mahomes is, you know, and he says Mahomes does this all the time. So I do think the trust there is growing, and I do think you are seeing a little bit of a shift.
I agree. Something else that's going to shift is the run game with Isaiah Pacheco, hopefully this week. I keep joking that Andy Reid has been allergic to a second down run. Like, they won't do it. They just won't do it. Second and five, like, they will not run it. And I get it. I understand it to some degree. Kareem Hunt is certainly not explosive. For all the great things he's done for this team, he is not explosive. Isaiah Pacheco is explosive. Will the Chiefs, do you think, when he comes back, get back to what they did early in the year and try to run the ball 25, 28, 30 times a game between those two guys, because that will help the defense that's been struggling lately?
Yeah, it was very balanced in the front of the season. And I think that is in large part due to Pacheco. It will be interesting. You know, will they go with the hot hand and stick with Kareem and then spell Kareem with Pacheco, or will they full on start Pacheco. I think they're going to ease Pacheco back into here, into this, and get him some confidence that he's fully recovered and, you know, can get back to playing the way he plays, which is violent. He is, you're right. He's explosive. His knees come up to his chin when he runs, you know, I mean, he's the definition of that kind of runner. And so, I think any athlete that goes off the field in an injury, when they come back, they always tend to question, is my body ready for this? You know, am I healed? And so I think they'll give him a little bit of time there, but I don't know whether he'll get the start. I just would like to see overall a balance there that they've kind of lost their way that they had in the front of season. To your point, Jacob, the front of the season was so balanced. I mean, I think they were an equal number of runs to equal number of passes, which is in itself un-Reed-like, you know, for, in terms of play calling. But, man, and the other thing I'd like to see too, you know, it was against Buffalo where they brought in the tackle eligible, and they're able to move the ball at will. Well, keep doing that until somebody stops it, for crying out loud. You know, I just don't understand that. But again, you know, when I second guess Coach Reed, I just feel like a child at the big kids table, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because and this has been something I've had in my mind for, I think, basically the entire time that Andy Reid has been the coach in Kansas City, is, and I'm sure every head coach deals with this with a fan base in the National Football League, where if you lean on the run, you're going to be accused of being conservative. If you go away from that, you're going to be accused of getting too cute. And so it's just that balancing act, that tightrope act, and not that Andy Reid concerns himself at all with what any of us think. But it's definitely interesting when we're talking about Isaiah Pacheco returning, and we've seen Samaje Perine have some valuable plays, especially in special teams. Carson Steele, you know, caught a pass, I think at least one pass on Sunday. They've really, you know, and then with Kareem Hunt, this run game is multifaceted, multi-level, and with Pacheco coming back, I don't think it's going to be, at least in my opinion, perceived as getting too cute. I think they can just lean on a lot of different players to get the job done.
Yeah, I don't think ground and pound ever is considered, you know, trickery or cute. You will get those plays from him. I remember very early in Coach Reed's tenure here, I spoke with Sal Palantonio. I think we were playing the Eagles, and I spoke with Sal Palantonio, who, of course, covered the Eagles and Coach Reed for a long time. And he said, hey, you're going to get a lot of great things. You just got to take the little bit of bad that you get with the great. Now, I think that, you know, the moniker that Coach Reed couldn't manage the clock, I don't see that. Yeah. I think he's overcome all of that. Oh, yeah. But I think every once in a while, you know, they do these trick plays and you're like, just run it. Just hand the ball off and let them run straight up the middle. I think sometimes that feels maddening, but it's what you get. And so, you know, whether that's putting something on film to make another team, I don't know what I can't say what the entire mindset is there, but sometimes it just feels like, you know, you're shooting yourself in the foot there. But I'd love to see just a ground and pound kind of game. And, you know, I'd love to hear a fan just utter the words Marty Ball just once, and then we can go back to, you know, kind of a balance.
Well, and look, the Panthers were the team to do that against. They're the worst run defense in football. The Chiefs were able to throw it on them, so I get it to some degree, but man, you're not, the defense isn't helping you right now. So, Dan, here we go. This is wacky. You get Friday afternoon football this week, followed by Sunday night football, followed by a road noon kick, followed by Saturday football, followed by Wednesday football, and we don't know what will happen in the last week. That's a pretty wacky and wild run here. And when, you know, the Raiders, I don't want to speak too soon, but I don't think the Raiders pose much of a threat this week. But after that, there's no more let-up games. So within that schedule are some really difficult games.
Yeah.
How concerned, when we think about like home field and those kinds of things, should we be, as we've watched the way the team's been playing lately, to go through that gauntlet? I mean, how many losses are we looking at, do you think, here, realistically, before the postseason starts?
first, to your point of the schedule, I mean, honestly, what's today? Is it, you know, I'm lost. Already lost, and we're on the front end of this thing. So I have no idea what's going to happen here from going forward. It is really if the Chiefs go in and pull that off, this will become the NFL's excuse to do whatever they want. Hey, let's play on Tuesday. Play on, you know. But with all of that said, you're right. I think now you watched the Chargers last night. They may have lost that game, but it shows they can play. I think the Broncos are for real. So you got two games in your division that matter still. And then you've got, and again, I guess I'm blowing by the Raiders. I probably shouldn't after the way we played in Carolina. But you got Houston Texans, which is, you know, not going to be an easy game. The Steelers on Christmas Day on all these weird days, not going to be an easy game. So they got a lot of work left here. Now, the one thing I would say, Jacob, and I know fans will fight me a little on this, but 10-1 doesn't happen by accident.
I agree.
You know, there is something to their ability to win games. Why they're making them tight is a problem. But even when they're tight, they're able to figure out a way to win the games. And I really think that's a positive. But, you know, man, how many weeks can you keep doing that, I guess, is the question. I love being 10-1, but these next 6 weeks are not going to be easy, you know. And only three of those are home games, so you're on the road for three of those as well.
It does look like, Dan, that the Friday game against the Raiders, Aiden O'Connell is on track to coming off of IR and starting at quarterback for the Raiders, with Gardner Minshew going down with a broken collarbone. I mean, it's not that big of a change, I think, from Minshew to O'Connell, and we don't even know if O'Connell is 100%. It's a Raiders team that, yeah, they have a lot of deficiencies. But so did Carolina. So does Carolina. Yeah. And we saw how that went down. How do you think the Chiefs should approach, at least defensively, and knowing that they've struggled over the last couple of weeks with a quarterback like Aiden O'Connell coming off of IR?
You know, the one thing I would say, Tommy, about the Panthers versus the Raiders is the Panthers have been at the bottom for a number of years and have been drafting talent at a really high level in the first round. I feel like the Panthers, while they haven't played well together, they do have a lot of talent. When I look at the Raiders team, I mean, honestly, two words come to mind, and that's it, and that's Max Crosby. He scares me because he is a wrecking machine, you know. But from an offensive standpoint, I just don't think they could keep up even with a misfiring Chiefs offense. So we'll see. I also think that, you know, defensively, you've got two quarterbacks who necessarily, you know, are pocket. I guess Minshew's not necessarily a pocket passer, but I mean, there's nothing like, you know, what we saw last night out of Lamar Jackson going to happen on Friday. I almost said on Sunday. See, I told you I'm lost. But I feel like the Raiders just don't have as much talent. I think they have enough to make it. You know, you got to play them, but not the same as the Panthers. The Panthers were underperforming. The Raiders are just a mess. They're just a dumpster fire, if you ask me.
Here we go. You guys will have the call on some Black Friday football. Listen, I got to tell you, all the days, and I think they'll solve that with a second bye week before too long and make it easier to do some of this stuff. But on a day where I don't get as inspired as much of the country at Black Friday shopping, I do appreciate having some football on Friday afternoon. I got to be honest.
I'm with you. If I didn't have to work it, I'd love it.
Yeah. Well, you guys will have the call here. You'll hear it over on the Chiefs Radio Network, KNSS, as always. Dan, always appreciate the insight. Always good stuff. Thanks for being here. Enjoy at least a home game, right?
Yes, yeah, that's true. Good point.
No turkey hangovers, no falling asleep in the booth.
I'm not making any promises on that one.
There's zero chance you'll be anywhere near Mitch Holthus and fall asleep. I'll just say that. All right, Dan, I appreciate it. Let's talk again next week.
Okay, guys, have a good week.
There goes Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider. Always appreciate the visits. I what I love about Dan is he shoots a straight. Yeah, there's concern.
Sure.
I mean, come on. There is. And leave it for the outside, right? On the inside, they can be as concerned as they want. That's not even what we're talking about. We're talking about on the outside. It's a little unnerving right now. I you know, at least they're 10-1. I think more people are catching on to that outside of Chiefs Kingdom, you know, from the national landscape. Let's compare it up to with what we saw last night, for instance. Two contenders we think that will be there in the end. One of them, the Chiefs, still have to play one more time in the regular season. Monday Night Football, Ravens, Chargers. What did we take away from the Harbaugh Bowl? We'll talk a little college basketball as well before we close up shop on this Tuesday. Don't go away. Sports Daily, coming right back. Back, everybody. Glad to be here with you on this Tuesday. By the way, Chiefs 12.5 point favorites against the Raiders. Good luck with that line, everybody. The way things have been going, we'll have to pick it tomorrow. We're making our picks tomorrow at 10 a.m. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you. It is a great day. We're almost to Thanksgiving. We're excited about it, right? Like, everybody's getting ready to stuff their faces. We got college basketball tonight. We'll tell you about. We'll get you ready for everything here in just a little bit. But first, let's talk Monday Night Football, Tommy.
Hey, by the way, we got to do KU and Duke because that's a major preview. Oh, yeah. So we'll talk about. Yeah. I know that's the big one. Yeah. That's the marquee one.
Yeah, we've got that one tonight. We've got games last night to talk about. We've got all that covered for you in our next segment. Let's go through Monday Night Football real quick as it pertains to the Chiefs. As we're talking Chiefs. It got away from the Chargers there in the fourth quarter. They did get it to within a touchdown. It was too little too late. The Ravens kind of flexed back a little bit, I think. A lot of it, honestly, against that defense, putting up 389 yards of offense. They ran the ball well, which was probably unexpected, I would say. But they did. And they looked really good. And they missed a couple of shots downfield, as did the Chargers. There could have been even more offense in this game. Both teams kind of missed a few deep balls a little bit. What was your big takeaway there? I think for me, it's that both of these teams can absolutely win playoff games and are threats in the AFC.
Yeah, it was a heavyweight fight for sure. And I think, honestly, credit goes to Baltimore's defense. It wasn't a fantastic showing by any means. But, you know, the Ravens defense has not been good this year. And that was the only thing that was concerning to me from Baltimore's point of view is can they stop Justin Herbert and the offense for the Chargers, and they did what they needed to do. It wasn't phenomenal, but they did what they needed to do, you know, to hold them at bay at least enough to support what Lamar and Derrick Henry were doing in that game. So I think that's the biggest takeaway is that even though you don't have a top tier defense in Baltimore, they can do enough. It could just be just enough, but they can do enough to win high level heavyweight matchups.
I think they can outscore people. Even in the postseason, because they can run the ball, because I thought kind of the same thing. And then I'm going like back through the game in my brain because I watched that one pretty closely last night. The Chargers missed two should have been touchdowns on just bad throws from Herbert, where I think one was a miscommunication, one was a drop. It's actually three, and one was a missed throw from Herbert. So I don't know. I mean, the Ravens were susceptible and the Chargers should have put up more offense. They didn't. I don't know, you know, but I do think so when I think about that, it just like I think the Ravens will be able to score on anyone with the addition of Derrick Henry and, you know, Mark Andrews being there and if he's healthy and all these things. So, yeah, I think they're a really interesting team. They're this high powered offense who is as versatile as it gets. The Chargers, I think, in better circumstances, and J.K. Dobbins left the game, and that made a huge difference for them and what they want to do, right? They just weren't as effective on the ground when he left early. I think it was early in the third quarter or maybe even late in the second quarter. But I think they're a threat. And I just look at those two, and, you know, I still think the Bills are better than both of them, more balanced anyway. But when we think about the Chiefs, boy, those would be two. Like, and we'll see the Chiefs play the Chargers. Those feel like not good matchups for the Chiefs. I think the Ravens are a little bit better of a matchup for the Chiefs than the Chargers are, but man, it is going to be tight, and it is going to be the AFC playoffs this year are going to be wild, wild, wild. The NFC is a hot dang mess, right? It's the Lions and then a mess. The AFC, I feel like we just keep getting these glimpses of really it's those four teams for me because the Texans just for whatever reason, they're not there right now. It's those four though. And honestly, like, I think they're 1A, B, C, and D Maybe Buffalo's got a slight advantage, but I don't think there's any clear favorite at all anymore in the AFC.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, with what Baltimore, that was important to them to get the win. And I mentioned that going into the game, I think when we were making our picks on Friday,
they had to have it.
Like there's a desperation factor that, you know, with that kind of roster and all of the talent to, you know, fall to, what would their record been had they lost? Would they be 7-5 if they had lost that game last night? I think they're now 8-4. So yeah, I mean, like that's just a complete underutilization of your talent and a disappointing record in some games that they absolutely should have won. So I'm all in on the notion that they had to have that game, and that with that they've reestablished themselves as one of the favorites in the AFC. I put them, you know, obviously right up there with Buffalo and Kansas City. So I think it's going to be that kind of race. I'm still not completely bought into Pittsburgh. I think they're a good team.
But they beat Baltimore?
I think they're a good – I just said I think they're a good team.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, they beat Baltimore. So, like, that for me – and I was just going to say, and I just forgot about Pittsburgh because I do think there are five. But they beat them, you know? Like, and it's hard because
they
played
to the
snow
Browns
globe game.
On Thursday
and they played
night football.
So did the Ravens.
Yeah.
Except Cleveland played it in a snow globe. So, you know,
and with the Steelers record down this, or with their schedule down the stretch,
we're going to find out
about
the Steelers.
We're going to find out a lot.
Yeah, their schedule is nasty. And I assume the Ravens, because with Jameis, all the teams are good in the NFC North, also have a nasty schedule.
You've got the Ravens on the road. You've got the Browns at home. Two matchups against the Bengals, the Eagles on the road, and the Chiefs at home. Like, that's what you've got down the stretch. It's a brutal, brutal schedule for Pittsburgh.
Well, and look, the Ravens get the Eagles, the Steelers, the Texans, and the Browns, too, in their home. They also get the Giants, lucky for them, but and a bye week. So, it doesn't matter to me because I think both of them, when I think about the playoff picture, are capable of beating the Chiefs. I think they're completely different teams. Honestly, maybe it's this for me when I stack them up. If I'm looking at, in a postseason game, Baltimore, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and the Chargers, I don't think, and we can throw the Texans, I suppose, still in there too. The team that of that group, only as it pertains to the Chiefs, not in totality, but only from a matchup perspective against the Chiefs, I think that scares me the least is Baltimore. Because they don't have that, you know, that edge rusher that can just wreak havoc. Kyle Van Noy comes from a different spot on the field more than he does the edge. Maybe he can get on the edge more often against the Chiefs. And maybe we should be more concerned about the Chiefs' sudden inability to stop people. But, you know, based on like strength versus strength and all that kind of thing, like that's the team I kind of would like the Chiefs to play. I think of that group of teams I just rattled off there, certainly more than Buffalo. The Chargers stylistically seem like a worse matchup. It doesn't matter. We're getting into, you know, weird in-depth things. They're all dangerous. That's the point for me. Like every single one of those teams, every team that ends up making the postseason, whoever wins that last spot, whether it's, you know, Miami or Cincinnati or the two leaders, right, or Denver, who is kind of pulling away a little bit, or Indianapolis, like all of those teams seem dangerous to me when I'm the Chiefs. We came into this season, Tommy, I thought there might be three, right? And it's just like it is totally turned upside down. It's going to be wild. I love it. I love the NFL so much. It's so crazy. And who knows? We've still got 5 weeks of the regular season. There will be some team. I think they ran it. I don't remember which game it was this weekend, but it was crazy. Last year in the NFL, it was something like five teams by week 13 or 12 that weren't in the postseason picture ended up making the postseason last year.
Yeah.
So who's that team we're not even thinking about right now that's going to like storm in? I don't even know.
And look, my opinion is that the Bills and the Ravens are the two teams that are most likely to challenge Kansas City for an AFC championship. I would put them
most likely to get there. I agree.
Well, and I would put them as far as just, you know, overall talent, both of those teams, and the way that they're executing right now over the Chargers and over the Steelers. And not that the Chargers and the Texans. I don't think the Chargers and the Steelers, it doesn't mean that they can't challenge for it. I think they absolutely can. But I think the Ravens and the Bills have the most likely shot at doing that. And I don't know, how you can come away from that game last night after watching both Derrick Henry and Justice Hill and then Lamar Jackson and the way that he was putting those passes on guys like Rashad Bateman and Mark Andrews and not have – at least a little bit of fear coming out of that game. And I know that the Chiefs played them in week one and beat them and all of that. But the Ravens are dynamite and the Bills are dynamite. And with the way that we've seen the Chiefs play defense the last couple of weeks and the way that their secondary has really struggled and they can't get a pass rush and all of that, man, after watching Buffalo and what they did to Kansas City last week and then the way that Baltimore has been playing lately, both of those teams are really, really good.
I think those are the two most likely teams to meet them in an AFC championship. My concern is you got to get to the AFC championship. And so I don't like I disagree to some degree in that way. Like the other matchups scare me more, but they're all scary. They're all scary. The AFC is nuts. The AFC, like even there are going to be at least two pretty dang good teams that don't make the postseason.
That's why that one seed is super important for the bye.
I
agree.
Probably
more so this year than any other year.
Totally agree. Because whether it's, Denver that ends up getting in there or, Miami who's surging now that they're healthy or Cincinnati who we've talked about way too much or...
it's not going to be Cincinnati.
Even to a lesser degree, Indianapolis, who I don't think is as good as those other teams... Like all of them are still good teams and are probably better than some of the teams that are going to make it into the NFC picture. It's just a wild year in the AFC. It's fun though. It's crazy. And we'll see if the Chiefs can get it solved. They've got some work to do here this in the next few weeks to try and shore some things up. Maybe the Raiders will cure what ails them. We got to make picks tomorrow. I don't know what to do with 12.5 points. I got to tell you that right now. How can you lay 12.5? With the way the Chiefs keep playing these close games. I don't think I can do it. As much as I think the Raiders suck and don't even have a quarterback now, I don't even know what to do.
I get physically ill with the thought of picking the Raiders in any regard. The spread could be 30 points and I'd have a hard time picking the Raiders.
Crazy.
You might have to I might have to plug my nose and make that pick.
We'll make them tomorrow. All right, let's come back. Let's talk some college basketball. We had K-State in action last night. We had K-State women fall in a top 15 matchup yesterday. And then, of course, we've got the big headline, must-see matchup tonight between KU and Duke. We'll have it all covered for you when we return. Don't go away. Sports Daily comes your way next. Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH and across the Odyssey family. Always appreciate the caffeine there from Prairie Fire. Tommy, it's wild time in college basketball. We see UConn all yesterday. They fall to Memphis.
Did you watch any of that game, by the way?
Good for the American. I did. I missed overtime.
Oh, my God.
I missed overtime. Dan Hurley continues to be the greatest villain perhaps in sports
at
the
moment. He's a maniac. He's an absolute maniac on the sideline.
Incredible, incredible villain for the sport. I love it. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I didn't even realize UConn was that good after they lost all their players. But Memphis, shout out to Memphis. Look, that's good for the American. That's great for the American. So good for them. You had Iowa State lose a heartbreaker against Auburn in a top five matchup. We got all these crazy matchups happening. Holiday week is nuts. You've got Houston and Alabama squaring off in a different tournament in Vegas than Kansas is playing in a game in Vegas. Like Vegas today at 7:00 on one side of town has a top 10 matchup between Houston and Alabama and basically another top 10 matchup on the other side of town between Duke and Kansas. So it's nuts right now in college basketball. Speaking of college basketball, you'll have Butler tonight on KFH at 7:30. You'll have the Shocker women taking on Missouri at 4:45. But all eyes tonight for us, Tommy, are on KU Duke. KU is a 3-point dog against the Blue Devils. Cooper Flagg. That's interesting. I would not have guessed that line here. The over-unders at 150 in this game feels gettable a little bit. It's 149, actually. Feels gettable. This is going to be a fascinating experiment here to stop a dominant big for the KU defense.
Yeah, the line has actually moved towards Kansas over the last 24 hours. It was at 3.5, and it's come back down to 3. So money's coming in on the Kansas side for sure. And I think a lot of this really is, to your point, it's how does Kansas deal with the height and the size of Duke? It's going to be a test unlike that what they've faced so far this season. Duke is one of, if not the largest, if memory serves, for me, one of the largest teams in college basketball as far as height is concerned. So there's going to be a test with Hunter Dickinson for sure. I'm sure that my guess would be that KJ Adams will be on Cooper Flagg. Can Adams do enough to at least slow him down? I mean, I think that Flagg will probably get his, but what can KJ Adams do to at least, keep him battling the entire game instead of getting easy shots for 40 minutes? So I don't know. I think that, you've got to keep an eye on the supporting cast with Duke as well. I understand this line. Honestly, I really do.
I do too.
I get it. I do think that Kansas, though, from top to bottom, from a talent perspective, is better. I think their shot-making potential is better. It's just how are they going to be able to deal with the size of Duke?
I agree with everything you just said. And if you're going to, you might still take a swing at the KU money line just because you never get plus money on a KU money line. It is interesting. They're very, very likely not going to win the rebounding battle tonight. Zeke Mayo is the second leading rebounder on this team, Tommy. So I don't think that, and that's a credit to Mayo. I'm not taking anything away from that. But, can the combination of Badunga and Adams and Dickinson hang, not just offensively, but defensively? I don't think they'll win the rebounding battle. I mean, the season averages don't play that out. Mm-hmm. The styles don't play that out. It just doesn't. You wouldn't imagine that will be the case. So what does that mean? For me, it means Kansas need to hit some shots. And this is why I think the line is where it is because Kansas is not shown so far that that's going to be what they do at a high scale is hit a lot of threes. But, it's something that when they're big down low and they're slower, you're probably going to get open looks more so maybe than you would before. And they're going to have to knock some of those down.
And if there's one deficiency that Duke has, they have allowed a lot of open shots this year.
They will because they're big, right?
That's what they do. I mean, I watched the game against Arizona, and Duke looked really good. But the one thing I noticed was, okay, they give up a lot of open looks, and Arizona just couldn't hit them. And I think that's been kind of a trend with Duke opponents is that, while they might get open looks, they're not really hitting those shots. On the flip side, Kansas, to your point, hasn't shown that they're going to be a prolific three-point shooting team, at least so far this year. In fact, they rank, down towards the bottom as far as, shooting threes in Division I basketball. So they've got to be able to take those shots at a higher clip than what they've done so far this year, and they've got to be able to convert them. Duke will give you those open looks. You just have to make sure that you're going to be able to hit them.
It's a pretty sound strategy these days in college basketball to invite teams to shoot. It's a harder thing for college teams to do than it has been. So I get it. All of these are reasons why the line is where it is, by the way. I don't care as much about the outcome. I mean, I do, but it's not going to mean that much for Kansas, probably, or Duke. What I care about is stylistically, it's just a perfect test for this Kansas team. It is. Like, we need to see Kansas go away from its comfort zone, I think, in this game. And this is as good a team as they will face at any point this year, at matchup wise, at that very thing, like doing things that'll probably be outside of the norm for the way Kansas plays. Now, we're going to learn something about a young player in Cooper Flagg too. He's got to be able to stop Hunter Dickinson. You know what I mean? Like, it goes both ways. And so, they'll probably get lots of help down there on Dickinson. I don't know that I think this is a Dickinson game. If Duke lets it be a Dickinson game, that's a huge mistake by Duke. They shouldn't let it be a Dickinson game. They should make Kansas hit shots on the outside. And they are one of the few teams in the country that ought to be able to take Dickinson's offense away. So we'll see if they do it. Mayo, I don't know what his prop is, but like Mayo threes seem appetizing to me. Mayo points in general seem appetizing to me from a betting perspective, but it's going to be a blast. That's an 8 p.m. tip tonight. Real quick, Tommy, K-State last night. Look, they bounce back. That's what they got to do, right? They were 10-point favorites. They win it by 16. Take that for what it's worth. They shot 50-plus percent from three. They were 11 for 20 from three. They're going to win a lot of games, and when they shoot the three-point shot that way. The problem is they don't always do that, and they really struggle offensively when they don't. But they did last night, and they won a game, and they won it, you know, fine, healthy, no big deal. You got a Coleman Hawkins game finally. 19 points, 10 rebounds. That's you've been waiting for that a little bit. So
hopefully he can build off of that. I mean, hopefully you build off of that. It's been a disappointing start to the season for Hawkins, even by his own account.
But Tommy, 15 of those dang points came from three. So that's not sustainable. He's not going to make five threes a game. Where is his offense everywhere else? You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy he scored 19 points. But 15 of those came from three. He's not shooting five threes a game. Why has it been such a struggle for him to get offense this year outside of the three-point shot? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, am I being too critical there? Like,
no, but I'm hoping that, you know, less about the type of shot that he took and he made last night and just more about the fact that he saw the ball go in the hoop. Hopefully that can be built off of and you know, doesn't settle, because I don't think that Coleman Hawkins settling for threes is a recipe for success overall, because you've got other three-point shooters on the team. You need Hawkins to create offense. You need him to get to the rim. You need him to draw contact. You need him to do all those things, be a shot creator. And so my hope is that from seeing him finally have some success offensively, that he can build off of that and, you know, be able to be a little bit more assertive.
I mean, my hope is they shoot 45, 46% from three and take a ton of them. Sure. You know, I don't think that's realistic for K-State. I will say this about Hawkins, and I do see this a lot when you look at his game. Like, the scoring wasn't really there at Illinois, hasn't really been there at K-State, but he's rebounding the ball. He's passing it well, and he almost always has kind of like the gritty stats, a lot of steals, a lot of blocks. He turns it over too much, but I don't want to be totally unfair because he's, you know, he's kind of been what he was at Illinois. The team needs him to be more than that, I think, because, you know, Doug McDaniel's offense hasn't been there. That was supposed to be a big piece. They got a long way to go, but it was good to see him get a big win. Don't want to take that away from him. 80-64. You heard that game right here on KFH last night. You know, just this is such a fun time of year, such a fun time of year for college basketball. Like, it's almost a preview. We fall back and recall these games all the time as like potential NCAA tournament games. You got Kansas Duke on a Tuesday night on November 26th.
I love that.
Let's go. Let's go.
I cannot
wait. 8 o'clock. And it's all day too. I mean, you got great games all day. San Diego State and Creighton are going to play at 1 o'clock. UConn at 2:30 against a good Colorado team. Oregon and A&M are both good. 3:30, right? Like, Alabama, Houston tonight. Iowa State, Dayton tonight. Duke, Kansas tonight. Auburn, North Carolina tonight. That's wild, wild stuff.
Can I tell you one thing though? And I realized this yesterday when I was watching the Maui Invitational. I mean, this is the first Maui Invitational without Bill Walton, right? You know, and that's a bummer. I wasn't a big Bill Walton fan. He got on my nerves more than anything else, but I always think about him and the Maui Invitational and the tie-dye and all of that. And Jay Billis is probably one of my favorite broadcasters of all time.
Yeah, he's great.
He and Dan Shulman are phenomenal. And they're doing the Maui games this year. That's awesome. There's something about Bill Walton and Maui, though, that, man, I miss it.
That was kind of like his last staple. Yeah. I agree. It feels like a Sweet 16. It feels, honestly, like I'm looking at that. There are eight games tonight featuring top 25 teams. And it looks like an NCAA tournament Sweet 16 is what it looks like, what we're staring at. So cool. We'll have that tonight. And then, of course, Shocker Women here on KFH. All right, we're going to come back. We'll tell you what else is on the network as we wrap up this Tuesday on Sports Daily.